with witnesses who were presenting to us. We finished the day with the Eskom board led by Mr. Khoza. We finished the day, but we did not finish our work. Today, the board will be interacting with the members. Yesterday afternoon, we gave the whole day to the evidence leader. We therefore agreed together with the board that we will start today. It is going to be the members that will start the day today and will end with the members. But before that, members would recall that this week was set aside for us to meet the board of Eskom. After the board would have met, Mr. Arnold Singh provided he gave us the documents in good time, and that did not happen. That was unfortunate. We could not meet Mr. Arnold Singh yesterday. Today we were supposed to meet Mr. Marcela Koko and the Deputy Minister after we finished with Eskom board. That is also not going to happen. We have given them time to prepare. Mr. Marcela Koko also raised an issue that he is not well prepared for the committee, but he was going to come and present his side of the story today. We then said, because we do not want to see to be unfair to our witnesses and be seen as people who want to put pressure on other people, we then said to him, go and prepare as enough as possible. And when we call you in the future, you don't have any other excuses. We have given him another time to go and prepare. The Deputy Minister was live on media, accusing the committee that the committee is not giving him a chance to come and put his part of the story on what on the allegations that were made in the committee during this inquiry by Mr. Susan Daniels. After we heard that, we therefore wrote to the Deputy Minister to say we are going to give him a chance to come and present in the committee. He therefore wrote back and said he wanted to be given time so that he prepares and collects all relevant information. We were waiting for that relevant information for today. But to our surprise, the Deputy Minister, we invited him a week before last, like any other person who was invited for this week, on the 30th of November. The emails went out to the office of the Deputy Minister. Yesterday, the PLO to the Deputy Minister said the Minister did not receive anything. The Deputy Minister did not receive anything. But when we look on our side, the emails went through. We don't know what happened. We don't want to assume there is a foul play. But we have also received a letter from the Deputy Minister addressed to the chairperson of the committee, Ms. Mukanga Kabash. I would want us members, I think every member has got the copy of the letter. The deputy minister has written a letter, and I would want to read the letter so that the nation understands the pressure that we were working under and the conditions that we are facing. Hence, I said, we do not want to seem as people who are unfair to other people. We want this inquiry to run smooth and people implicated in this inquiry to be given time to come and correct what has they thought it is wrong that has been said in the inquiry. Or come and agree that what is said in the inquiry is actually correct and put their side of the story in the correctness of that. Let me read the letter. Honorable Lungi Nganga Gabashe, MP, Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Public Enterprise in Parliament. Dear Ms. Nganga Gabashe, the heading is Parliamentary Inquiry into the Department of Public Enterprise and State-Owned Companies. Your letter dated 30 November 2017 and received on the 5th December 2017 bears reference. I note your invitation to appear before the inquiry on the 6th December 2017. Given the fact that I only received the invitation letter a day before I am expected to appear before the committee, I have not had an opportunity to seek legal advice on the legal opinion you provided. I also have not had an opportunity to go through the statement and transcript of Ms. Suzanne Daniel's testimony. Furthermore, you indicated in your letter that any person implicated in evidence will be afforded an opportunity to respond to the allegation made against them. I am making this written submission to respond to the allegations. It cannot be assumed that a response can only be valid or legal if it is made in person. Given the circumstances and background of my invitation to appear before the Portfolio Committee, the written submission adequately addresses the issue I am required to attest to. As a result, it is not necessary for me to appear before the committee as I am not responding to the committee in writing. Please find attached my submissions. Finally, I note that the committee reserves its rights in terms of the powers, privileges and immunities of Parliament and Provincial Legislature Act 2004. I also reserve my rights to seek legal recourse in this regard. Sincerely, Mr. Dikobe Ben Martins, MP, Deputy Minister, Public Enterprise. It's signed on the 5th, 12th, 2017, and CC'd to Advocate Tutuzelo Vanara. Members, that is the situation that we are confronted with today. If there is any member that wants to respond to what I have raised with you, I am now going to give you a chance to do that. Honorable Nuyenge, Honorable Natasha, Honorable Mazone, Honorable Mare, and Honorable Swart, Honorable Singh, and Honorable Dlamini, in that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. It is so unfortunate that we are finding ourselves in this quagmire caused, unfortunately, by the Deputy Minister. I think, Chairperson, it is unfair on the part of the Deputy Minister to behave in this manner. The Deputy Minister is also a member of Parliament, and he understands fully the role that we are playing. I don't understand as to where does he get the locustandi to undermine us. If it is us as individuals, it will be something else. But I think he undermines Parliament, of which he is part of. It's unfortunate, but we are governed by laws as to how should we execute our duty. And as we pursue our work, there are also sanctions that will assist us and other methods. So the failure by the Deputy Minister to understand the importance of this, it can't stop there. I think we have to exhaust another method, which is to subpoena him. And then if he further fails to do that, we will do something else. I don't think we must start there and then say the Deputy Minister is unable to come, when he is the very first person to actually cry foul and behave as if he wanted to put his side of the story. Unfortunately, we cannot just bend and say, no, let's not. Maybe he was not even going to be called, because it's him who attacked this process unnecessarily. It wouldn't be that necessary, because we are responding to a call that was made by him, and there was no point of us to say, now that he wants to come, let us not call him. Thank you, sir.
Honourable Mazon. Chairperson, thank you. I think, yes, the Deputy Minister has certainly made in a very unfortunate blunder here, and I would suggest that he immediately seeks legal advice, preferably not from the State Attorney who gave the very poor advice to the Minister. But nonetheless, this is a constitutionally mandated committee, and one doesn't have the privilege of deciding whether or not you appear before us. We offer you the opportunity in a polite way via invitation to appear before us, but certainly you are constitutionally obligated to appear before us. And certainly the Deputy Minister should know this, and he should respect it, given the fact that the Minister to whom he serves as a deputy, although she came here unwillingly, still came. I think, Chairperson, that the time for niceties is now over. We have exhausted all possible niceties that we could with the Minister. The Minister is the one who jumped up and down screaming foul and insisted that the Deputy Minister, thank you, screaming foul and saying that he must appear before this committee. I think my colleague, Dr. Luenge, is absolutely right. Mr. Martin certainly wasn't on the radar for any questioning. He insisted on coming here. Now we have reason to believe that he must answer questions. So, Chairperson, I would like to move that today, this committee, once we break through Advocate Venara, immediately issues subpoena, and that the Deputy Minister learns the hard way what happens when you take on a committee of Parliament that's constitutionally mandated.
Thank you very much. Honourable Mare.
Well said, I support. Thank you.
Honourable Swart.
Thank you, Chair. It is startling to read here that a Deputy Minister indicates that it is not necessary for me to appear before the committee. The written submission adequately addresses the issues I'm required to attest to. It is for this committee to decide whether you will attend and what questions you will answer. This is an inquiry, and it's not for the executive to decide whether they're going to attend to Parliament or not, and in what manner. Here he is deciding in what manner he will attend to Parliament, and I find it totally unacceptable. He, as was indicated by other speakers, jumped up and down when we had evidence before us as to his involvement and insisted to come and explain. Once you want to come and explain, then it opens you up to questioning in determining and getting to the bottom of the facts. So I am fully in support of the fact that we have invited the Minister, the Deputy Minister, to come. He has failed to appear, and that we should then make use of the subpoena provisions to compel him to appear before the committee and answer his statement as well as questions surrounding the allegations against him. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning, everybody. I mean, the action of the Deputy Minister reminds me of William Shakespeare's Hamlet, one of the quotations was, the lady doth protest too much, methinks. Although this is not a lady, this is a gentleman. I must say, Honorable Chairperson and colleagues, I'm personally very disappointed with the response of the Minister. Deputy Minister, I have the highest respect and regard for him since we've been colleagues here in Parliament. And I think he needs to know that we are not receiving written submissions only. Like sometimes in court, you get court papers, written papers, and the lawyers would know, and the judges decide on the basis of written papers. Here we want oral evidence to give those that come here an opportunity to explain themselves on the basis of written submissions. So I fully support the fact that the Honorable Deputy Minister should be subpoenaed and reminded of the roles and obligations of this committee and his rights as well. But he certainly has to come before this committee as early as our first sitting in January to give him an opportunity. This is to give him an opportunity, to explain himself and how he's involved in this matter. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Honorable Zamin.
No, thanks, Chairperson. The nature is that when you write a letter to someone, you must be able to respond. He's the one who wrote a letter to us by challenging us that we're not giving him an opportunity to come and explain. And he's got no problem with speaking to that guy because he's been calling media briefings trying to justify his stories. Yeah. So he must come to this committee. He behaved like a drama queen here, calling media briefings and everything. So we must subpoena that drama queen. He must come here and answer questions because he's got the capacity to speak, but he wants to go and do media briefings where he speaks by himself and no one is asking questions. Now we want to speak to him as colleagues and we want to ask him questions. So let's just subpoena him, let's get him to be one of the few leads because that's how liars and thugs operate. So let's get him to come here so that we can attend to him very fast.
Thank you, honorable members. Honorable members, it is clear that there is a motion in this house that says the minister, the deputy minister must be subpoenaed. I just want us to record that. Can somebody move for the subpoena of the minister and one should second the motion? Okay. Honorable Luyenge has moved the motion, and the motion has been seconded by three members. By all members. Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. We are done then, therefore, with the issue of the Deputy Minister. Honorable, your advocate, Vanara, will take it up legally and do what is necessary to be done. Again, honorable members, before we go to the... It is unfortunate that the board came in a time where there are so many things that are coming up. We have also received two letters from two different lawyers that is addressed to me on behalf of the testimony that is made by Susan Daniels. It is coming from the first letter is coming from Khotsioni Pilane Tonis on behalf of Ajay Gupta. It is written like this, honorable members. I want to put it also on record so that everybody hears about this letter. We act on behalf of Mr. Ajay Gupta in his personal capacity. Your portfolio committee is currently hearing evidence into allegation of state capture. In so doing, it has recently heard evidence from Ms. Suzanne Daniels. In her testimony, she made a number of very serious claims and allegations involving my client, Mr. Ajay Gupta. Among the allegations that she made were the following. 3.1, she met Mr. Salim Essa at Melrose Arc on 29th July 2017. 3.2, when she met him, they proceeded to some apartments where she met Mr. Ajay Gupta, the Deputy Public Enterprise Minister, Mr. Ben Martins, and Duduzane Zuma. 3, she makes various claims as to that which she says occurred there. For included in claims was the allegation that there were discussions regarding legal matters related to the former Eskom CEO Brian Molefe, and specifically Mr. Ajay Gupta wanted to talk about the court hearing that is coming up in respect of Mr. Molefe. She is not only very specific as to the presence of Mr. Ajay Gupta at this meeting, but claims that he said he would have to talk to someone in the office of the Deputy Judge President in order to ensure that the hearing took place after December 2017. She even describes that which Mr. Ajay Gupta was wearing. Point four, I annexed a photocopy of the passport of Mr. Ajay Gupta, a copy of the relevant immigration stamps page from Mr. Ajay Gupta's passport, a copy of the official recording showing that the aircraft ZSAOAK flew from Lanseria, South Africa to Bhubaneswar, India on the 22nd of July 2017 and arrived in India 23 July 2017. The aircraft returned on the 31st July 2017. Five. Also annexed is a screenshot from YouTube video taken on the 29th July in India at a religious festival, clearly visibly on the video. If you care to view it by accessing the relevant YouTube address, is Mr. Ajay Gupta, who indeed attended that festival. Since the document evidence which we have supplied to you demonstrate that Mr. Ajay Gupta was in India from 23rd July 2017 to 31st July 2017, and that specifically on the 29th July, he attended religious celebrations in India. The claims made by Ms. Susan Daniels are clearly false, as quite obvious, Mr. Ajay Gupta could not have been in Merrows Arc, Johannesburg on the 29th July 2017 when he was in India on that day and had been there for some while by then and only returned to this country on the 31st of July 2017. The allegations made by Ms. Daniels are obviously harmful to Mr. Ajay Gupta and harmful to the country, in that she appears to suggest that no less a person than a deputy judge president could be conducted by our client in order to arrange a date for the hearing of a case involving Mr. Molefe. The interviews by your portfolio committee are broadcast nationwide and reported on by the media. Allegations made there are taken to be true not only by the media but by the public. When they are bluntly untrue, they are recklessly distributed and the public is seriously misled. Of course, our client suffers untold harm in consequences of such wild allegations being made against him. We wish to put it on record that Mrs. Susan Daniels was under oath when she incorrectly, intentionally made the malicious claims against our client as set out in paragraph 3 above. In this regard, we have been instructed that we report such conduct to the relevant authorities, including the South African Police Service and the Speaker of Parliament, so that the necessary investigation may be instituted against Ms. Susan Daniels and further that the necessary criminal charges may be instituted against her. We would point out that these allegations were made without Mr. Gupta having been approached to hear his side of the story. We are confident that, armed with this all information, you will do the rightful thing. Yours faithfully, dictated by Mr. Philani and not signed, Khoitse Philani. That is the letter that is written by the Khoitseona Philani attorneys that is coming to the committee on behalf of Mr. Ajay Gupta. Can I read the second one? The second one comes from Gani Mayet attorneys. It is also addressed to me. Re-fundamental rights of persons potential subject to adverse findings. Honorable Chairperson, we act for Mr. Ajay Gupta. Mr. Gupta and the Gupta family have been wrongly implicated in false wrongdoing, directly or indirectly, either individually or through family or business associations. Before the inquiry for which you serve as chairperson, through testimony in many documents before you, three witness and documents before the inquiry wrongly implicate him and or the Gupta family falsely in relation to corporate governance failures at Eskom Holdings SOC Ltd. These matters are the subject of the current first phase of the inquiry. Three, as an example of the false allegation against Mr. Gupta and his family before the inquiry, we refer to the perjured testimony of Ms. Susan Daniels on 8 November 2017. Ms. Daniels falsely stated on oath that she met Mr. Gupta on the 29th July 2017 in Melrose Arch, and that Mr. Gupta made statements suggesting that he would seek to influence a deputy judge president in respect of the scheduling of a court hearing. No less. There, when challenged about the truth of her testimony, Ms. Daniels made a statement to the press that she stands by what she said to the inquiry. As Mr. Gupta made plain in a letter dated 15 November and sent to you as well as the Speaker of Parliament and the National Prosecuting Authority, he was not in South Africa on or about the date of the meeting alleged by Ms. Daniels. He provided to Parliament supporting evidence in the form of an exit stamp on his passport, the flight record of his aircraft, and a publicly available video showing him giving a speech at a religious festival in India on the very date he is alleged to have met Ms. Daniels. We attach a copy of this letter to ease of reference. This is but an example of the many matters on which the inquiry has received false testimony. It highlights the need for the inquiry to exercise extreme caution in sifting facts and testing allegations. It further highlights the need to provide all persons who are accused before the inquiry to be given a meaningful opportunity to refute those allegations. Documents before the inquiry further implicate him or the Gupta family in relation to corporate governance failure at Transnet SOC and Denel SOC. We understand these matters are the subject of two subsequent phases of the inquiry. We know that the proceedings of the inquiry are public and statements of witness and documents referred to in evidence are available to the public. The public record of the inquiry to date indicates beyond doubt that Mr. Gupta and his family are potentially subject to adverse findings. Witness and members of the inquiry routinely deploy terms such as Gupta-linked, Gupta-connected, and Gupta-related when referring to alleged corrupt practices. Surprisingly, despite a lapse of nearly 6 months, during which adverse but false evidence concerning his conduct has mounted before the inquiry, no invitation has been forthcoming from the inquiry for the production of information to clarify or refute the allegations. Mr. Gupta has refrained to date from public statements about the work of the inquiry or related matters concurrently before the courts. He has done so in defense of to Parliament and the judiciary and to prejudice of his name and reputation and that of his family members. He has no recourse in law to protect his name and reputation because the proceedings are protected by parliamentary privilege. The inquiry has, as we stand it, been advised of the fundamental procedural rights of those who may be subject to adverse findings by the inquiry. The inquiry has also received advice to invite interested parties to, at the very least, make input in writing. Submissions should be sifted and analyzed, and if necessary, parties should then be heard orally. We wrote, note that Mr. Gupta has not been invited to make any input in writing. This does not, with respect, indicate a fair-minded treatment of the present issue before it, supporting the view that the inquiry has other motives than fair and honest truth-finding. Mr. Gupta denies wrongdoing in which he and his family members have been implicated before the inquiry. In order to safeguard Mr. Gupta's fundamental procedural rights from further harm and to give Mr. Gupta and his family an opportunity to provide written input to the inquiry, we call upon you to furnish us with a detailed list of questions that the inquiry may wish to put to him in writing. Please let us have this list within 10 business days of receipt of this letter. In addition, if Mr. Gupta or any member of the Gupta family is required to testify before the inquiry, we request that you provide a detailed list of questions at least 2 weeks before the hearing, and that these persons receive at least 10 business days notice of the hearing. Please note further that neither Mr. Gupta nor the members of the of his family are available in the period between 8 December 2017 and after 15 January 2018. I don't know where the 10 days and the 7 days, where do they apply. Should you for any reason not be inclined to furnish us with the requested list of questions, we request that you notify us of this in writing and furnish your reasons for declining to do so. We wish to place on record that any attempt to conclude the business of the inquiry or to prepare any report, draft or final without giving our clients the opportunity to provide written input would render the inquiry fundamentally unfair and would simply reinforce the perception among sectors of the public, and as we stand echoed by persons testifying before the inquiry, that the inquiry has ulterior motives other than fair and honest truth finding. Yours faithfully, electronically transmitted, Mr. Ahmed Ghani. Those are the two letters that we have received from the attorneys of Mr. Ajay Gupta. Any reflections? Mr. Luyenge, Mr. Swart, Mr. Damini, Ms. Singh, Ms. Mazone, and Mr. Kungube, in that order. Kungube.
Salo, briefly, let me indicate that what is taking place now is actually the gist of the matter. Earlier on, in a meeting that we had at the Townhouse Hotel with the minister, when presentations and documents that we received, in this country there is a perception about this family, this Gupta family. And in that, I made a clarion call to this committee to afford this family an opportunity to come and present their case. Now, I'm failing to understand now, when we want to do justice and then people decide to respond negatively. But I want to maybe call upon the committee that as a committee, we never undermine the importance of calling this family. And we wanted them, but when there's someone else, but this Ajay Gupta, if he's part of the three that are being mentioned, no, he has not missed it. He will definitely come here. We will talk to him. We want him to justify or prove wrong whatever has been said here, even if it was said by us. But it can't rub off the perception that is outside there, that there is wrongdoing and they are the perpetrators. Now we are providing them an opportune time to present their case. I'm sure the justice of this country allows us to do that on a fairly and squarely basis. We want them to be here, but we cannot be We cannot be that naive and be weak and then allow a situation whereby we do that on his terms. No matter how many billions that family has, even if they can buy us all, including this parliament, but they cannot buy the law. The number of rands and dollars does not speak. We cannot operate in a manner that is dictated by any individual in the world. On that one, he must forget. We will do our work according to our plan as guided by the laws. And go to Sir.
Chair, firstly, I'm not sure who's acting for Mr. A.J. Gupta. We've got a letter the 15th of November from one firm of lawyers, and we've got one the 30th of November from another firm of lawyers. One presumes the latter one is the one firm that is acting for him. The information that is contained in the first letter in paragraph 4 is obviously very important about the annex of a photocopy, and we need to look into that. It's not evidence before us, but it is obviously very important that it does indicate, as we've always said, those implicated will give the opportunity and be given the opportunity to clear their name. But it says the documents and evidence which are supplied, it's not evidence before us, and that is why we invited them to come, the Gupta brothers and others to come, and at an opportune time to come and give their version and answer the allegations against them. If anyone looks at the more recent letter, which is the 30th of November, if you look at paragraph 8, no invitation has been forthcoming from the inquiry for the production of information. Now, we clearly took a decision that's in the public domain to invite the three Gupta brothers, Mr. Eric Wood and Mr. Salim Issa, to come to Parliament at a certain time to put their side, to answer the allegations against them. So it is not correct that no invitation has been forthcoming. They might not have received it in writing, but we've clearly given an indication that we will invite those implicated to come to Parliament. And it is not for Mr. Gupta or his lawyers to decide on what basis they will give evidence here, that we give them a detailed list of questions. Why should they be treated other than any other witness? Did we give the acting chairman a list of questions? No. Why should they be entitled to a list of questions? They will be given transcripts of evidence. And why should they be given at least 10 business days notice of the hearing? Why should they be treated otherwise than any other witness? I believe, Chair, that this should be referred to our legal department to respond, that they will be given the opportunity. And in fact, this committee has taken the decision to invite the three Gupta brothers to this committee at an opportune time, and they'll be able to give us more information about what is alleged in both of these letters, and we will then be able to ask them questions on our basis. This is a parliamentary oversight committee. It's not for witnesses to decide on what basis they will attend and what questions will be asked to them. Whilst we appreciate their fundamental rights, we are firm and resolute in that regard, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. You know, Chairperson, you must not take these Gupta too serious, because they are the same people that have denied image that are all over. If you look at these letters, both of them, there is no manual signature. And chances are that at some stage they might even deny these letters. We have asked them to come to Parliament. We have asked them to come here physically so that we can ask them questions where they cannot deny anything, because they are known of denying things that needs to happen. And they don't deserve any special treatment at all. So we must proceed with the way we've been proceeding, how we call all witnesses to come and answer in this inquiry. But, Chairperson, lastly, you must amend that letter to Mr. A.J. Gupta. I'm interested to that YouTube video where he's dancing there in the festival. that he steals our money and then he go and dance. I want you to see that video of him dancing. He must come with it here so that we can first see him dancing. So we must just put that and say, we want to see that dance that happened. Thanks.
Thank you, Jefferson. Jefferson, I think it's very rich of the lawyers of Ajay Gupta and the Gupta family to suggest, and I want to quote, that they have been wrongly implicated in false wrongdoing, directly or indirectly, either individually or through family or business associations. I think we have not reached any conclusions as yet, and it will be unfair for us to reach any conclusions on this matter. But let me say the writing is on the wall. And I'll leave it at that. But just responding to Honorable Swat, I think Honorable Swat, the lawyers, the one represents Mr. Ajay Gupta in his personal capacity with the state, and the second letter is the Gupta family. So it's two different lawyers, but with similar content. Chairperson, I agree that we have already decided as a committee that the Gupta family would be invited. But Chair, I just want to place this again on the table. That before we rise today, we must firmly decide who else we should invite before this committee to give them an opportunity to respond to any allegations that have been made against them, and also give them an opportunity to put their side of the story. One such person I moved at the last meeting, and it was seconded by Honorable Floyd Shivambu, was the president. And the reason I'm repeating this, Honorable Chairperson, because if you look at the report or the testimony given by Honorable Acting Chairperson of ESCO, Mr. Khoza, the presidency is directly involved. And they are going to write a letter to us denying those allegations. So I think in fairness to the president, we need to give the president or the presidency, I'm going to ask Mr. Khoza some questions later about the difference, a right to come before this committee and give us their side of the story. And I'm putting that as a formal proposal before this committee.
Thank you, Mr. Singh. Honorable Mazon. Chair, I do so hate wasting time on these kind of letters that do nothing more than try and halt our work as a committee and try and negate from the work that this committee is doing. Chair, I think the sheer arrogance that the Gupta family clearly has with regards to the kind of power they perceive to wield in this country is evident by the fact that they would dare write a committee of parliament that's constitutionally mandated a letter like this. Chair, I'm delighted to hear that Mr. Gupta is available from the 16th of January, because so am I. So I'd suggest that he wants 10 days' notice. What's the date today? It's the 6th of December. Let's give him notice now. We'll see you on the 16th of January as per your letter. Can't wait to hear what you've got to say. But you are not more powerful than this government, and you are certainly not more powerful than Parliament. And, Chair, you know, we have to stop this illusion that these people are able to dictate to us what we do. It is simply not the case. And let's just be frank about this. Why is this inquiry taking place? This inquiry is taking place because there is a perceived and real thing called state capture. And the family that is at the heart of this issue is a family called the Gupta family, whether they like it or not. Every piece of evidence that has come before this committee, every document that we have, has this family at the heart of our evidence. So, you know, Chair, enough with the niceties now. I've said it once before. I agree completely with Mr. Singh. Let's just put it on the table. We want the Gupta brothers here. We want Salim Issa here. We want Eric Woods here. We want Duduzani Zuma here. We want Dudu Mayeni here. We want the president here. Chair, we must stop this now. We are in charge of this committee. We are the first line of defense for 54 million South Africans who are waiting for us to make sure that this country isn't captured any further than it already has been. We must stop messing around now, and we must start flexing our muscle. So, 16th of December, Mr. Gupta and I have a date in this chamber. January. Thank you very much. Honorable
Kumubed. Thank you. Honorable Chair, I thought you were responding to Gupta. And I would propose that we deal with Gupta. If we've got other discussions, let's table them differently. Because some of the things we do
with regard to this committee's approach, they've got little to do with what you feel. They've got little to do with, they've got a lot to do with the proper application of the mind. You know, the most critical thing to me is the success of this process, not any other drama. And I think I want to put that point. And the other challenge we have is that sometimes we sit as a, in a multi-party caucus, discuss sensitive matters. The problem is that if not all of us are present in those meetings, it does show. But having said that, I think what this letter is doing is an attempt just to disrupt our work, to divert us, make us to attend to these letters. Don't be surprised, Chair, if similar letters about a number of other people who get implicated will all, every time we write a letter is read there, every time we write a letter, we'll end up one day, the whole day, reading letters of people who are sitting somewhere having coffee. And they sit there and they write to us. I would propose, Chair, in the future, if that is legally allowed, when letters like these come to us, our legal people must just respond without even reading such a letter here, so that they are told the rights, the powers of this committee. They write to us, we write back to them, and if there's a need for them to appear, a caucus discuss, we decide who should appear. And I'm requesting that we don't read these letters again in future. Because I can tell you there's an attempt to disrupt this committee. And people are monitoring how we react to these letters. Remember, there were vigilante groups at some stage who marched here. Some of them, we know who they represent. It's not hidden, it's obvious. And they actually, it's not even hidden, because they explain it themselves. Others write press statements that Gupta is abused. I don't know what it means to abuse Gupta. But however, I'm proposing that let's deal with this disruption in a particular way. When these letters come, you can take a note that certain letters have come, let them be responded. And if somebody wants to talk to us, there must be a way of talking, not through letters. Because if they want to talk to us, let's arrange them as come and sit here and answer questions. There must be no people who've got privilege of talking to us through their letters that are disruptive. So let's respond to them. That is one point. And I think other colleagues have answered properly, because somebody must demonstrate that we have breached the privilege of this process. If you don't have a case with regard to that, sit at home and have your tea. That's it. Where we are sitting now, we know we're doing what we're supposed to do. Anyone who believes legally that we are doing something wrong, they know what to do. So we don't want to spend, we'll spend I don't know how many minutes now, dealing with the tantrums of Gupta. Because these are tantrums as far as I'm concerned. So these chaps, I think they have heard it nicely in South Africa. Some of the things they say, you can see that now we must go and monitor YouTube and all those nonsensical things. So I'm saying, I'm proposing that particular approach. There are two things that I'm saying. I'm proposing, one, letters like this must be responded in a particular way, as proposal I'm making. Two, that as far as I'm concerned, actually, Mr. Swart, Honorable Swart said it, we are on course for doing our work. If you've got a different view legally, you know what process to follow. And we must not allow things like this to disrupt us again or to do our work.
Thank you very much, Honorable Members. I am not sure when I was reading these letters, at the end of each letter, I have specifically, or they have specifically said the letters are not signed. Do we respond to letters that are not signed? Maybe the members don't care about that. They think that we need to respond out this. Because one of the members, Mr. Dlamini, said, we can respond to these letters. At the end of the day, we'll find out these letters are not legal letters. Because they are not signed. And we are a legal body of parliament. I'm just commenting on that. We need to sit down and talk about that as a committee separately. You are saying, Honorable Kungubele, that we must ignore these things that makes us to lose focus. I have already lost my focus now because I am told that there are hawks inside here who want all my details. So I'm really disturbed. I am not sure if I'll be able to continue with this because if there are hawks here, hawks knows our all everybody's address and details, and they need my details, and I don't know what types of hawks are those hawks that come to a parliamentary committee and ask for that. We will talk about that separately, but I just want to bring to your attention that I am already disturbed as a chairperson of this inquiry who is chairing now. Honorable Swart.
No, Chair, we can't deal with this outside. We want to know in front of the cameras now what intimidation is being brought against you, what are the hawks doing here, what information do they want from you, is it an investigation, your family's already been threatened, and we find this outrageous. We should call the minister to come here and explain what they are doing here.
Can I raise a procedural proposal?
Chair, I'm still busy.
No, I'm raising a procedural proposal, Honourable Swart. I'm not fighting what you are doing. My proposal is that if there are such developments, you need a 5 or 10 minute suspension. Because it's not a matter that everyone can recklessly respond to. We must know exactly what they are speaking about. We'll end up responding to everything that comes our way.
Chair, may I just, I do appreciate that request, but we are a parliament, we are in the public domain, we'd like you to enlighten us. Who are the people that are contacting you? Are they trying to intimidate you? They need to come and possibly explain to this committee, what are they doing here? This is another act of intimidation that you are seeing. And it is already, Chair, you've already indicated in front of everyone that you are not focused because of this. Why now, this morning, are they coming when they know? And this is outrageous. This is Parliament. It is time for us to stamp our authority and say, this is unacceptable.
I'm proposing that.
But Chairperson.
No, the other members are opposed to what you are saying, Honorable Kungubele. Let me give them a chance to speak. Honorable Dlamini, Honorable Singh, and Honorable Mugabe.
No, Chairperson, two issues. This is a serious issue. There's intimidation. Already, you are saying you have lost focus. We are trying to do the work. These are serious issues. People are dying every day in this country with the issues linked to politics, business, and everything. And Honorable Kungubele, if he is reckless, he must not speak on our behalf. By saying when we are raising a serious issue, we must not respond in a reckless way. If he's reckless, he must speak for himself. He's not our spokesperson here. So, this is a serious issue. It needs to be attended. If there are hawks here, then we must be able to deal with that issue immediately and right now.
No, Honorable Members, I don't want you to fight on this issue. It's not necessary. I have given you a chance to speak. I have asked Honorable Kungubele not to raise again the issue because there are hands that I have seen. Honorable Singh.
Yeah, Chair, just to state that we are far from being reckless. If our chairperson is being intimidated, then all of us are intimidated. I mean, you know more than anybody else. An injury to one is an injury to all. And we are all part of this committee. I hope I'm given a chance to speak, Chair.
Honorable Kungubele, can you give people a chance to speak, please, Honorable Members?
So I think we need to get to the bottom of this. And I think there's no harm in us requesting everybody that's here, whether they're in the public gallery or seated here on the floor, to introduce themselves, so we know who is who here, and we don't have to ask them the purpose of their visit here because the public are invited, but we need to know who is here in this room. And I'm
Honorable
suggesting that you do that, Chair. Thank you.
Honorable Luyen.
Honorable Members, through you, Chairperson, we have just said here, we won't allow a situation whereby elements from outside will be able to disrupt us. And now we are beginning now to disrupt our own program. Who else do you think will be intimidated other than the chairperson in order to disrupt this process? We knew that from the beginning, colleague. Let us not behave as if we did not expect aspects or conduct of this nature. But I think it is upon us to sit as members of this committee. We took some resolutions pertaining to the same conduct, pertaining to the same attitude that has been adopted towards the chairperson, Comrade Rando. So I feel, chairperson, that it will be appropriate that we have just a 10-minute session as us, because these hawkers and hawks that might be around, they must not take everything and think that they know us. There is nothing wrong in us going back. We must revisit our resolution as it pertains to this. We made approaches. It's not the only method of disruption of this. There are also other methods that have been used against us. Some of us were being called Zuptas and Guptas. No one is talking about that. We must not do that. Let us concentrate on this work, and we are going to conclude this work, but we will do that collectively, not as individuals.
Chairperson, I don't want to then to discuss this matter here. I'm seconding that we take a break. Please.
Thank you very much. We are taking a 15-minute break. We'll be back at 10:45.